So there's a children's movie. I'm sure all of you are deeply versed in children's narrated movies, like I am these days. But there's a movie, it's called Ratatouille. Anybody familiar with that one? Okay. And in that movie, it's you know, a pretty typical storyline. There's a rat that becomes the chef of a restaurant. Somebody thought of this at some point and made a whole lot of money off of it. But there's this rat, and he's different from the rest of his family, and he lives in this house, and he always watches the same TV show that the old lady in his house watches, and it's a cooking show. And this guy named Gusteau, I can't remember what his first name is, but he has this famous book, and this book is called Anyone Can Cook. Anyone can cook. And so he gets it in his mind that anybody can cook. And he goes back to his family and he talks with them about it. And they say, no, you're wrong. That's not your world. And then eventually he meets a human being. And the whole story is about how there's only supposed to be certain people who can cook. But he believes this mantra that anybody's able to cook. During the season of Advent here, one of the things that we highlight that makes our faith so profound and so amazing is that because of the gift of God, anyone can delight. Anyone can celebrate. Our world looks around and they say, if you are wealthy enough, you have reason to celebrate. You can throw a party. If you're good looking enough, if you have a great relationship, if you're sexy enough, if you're healthy, then you've got good reason to celebrate. If things have gone well in your life, then go ahead and be happy. And Jesus comes onto the scene, and in the Gospels we look around, and Jesus says these ridiculous things. And he says these things like, if you are poor in spirit or brokenhearted, you can be happy. Jesus says things like, if your baby is crying all the time, don't worry, you're still loved. You can be totally happy, Bethany. Jesus turns the world upside down, and he does it through all of these value statements. Blessed, he says in Matthew 5, are those who mourn. There's a reason that they could be happy. We've been talking about what it means to celebrate for last week and then the coming 2 weeks as we head up to Christmas. I almost said Easter. Look at that. Not yet. Whoa, settle down there. Jumping ahead in the story. We're talking about what it means to celebrate through a number of different circumstances. Not just celebrate when life is easy or good or beautiful, but have reason and meaning to celebrate. Dwayne spoke last week about what it means to celebrate in the midst of uncertainty. This week we're talking about something even more heavy and significant to talk about. Gina, why don't you come up and join me at this point? We're talking about celebrating through seasons that are completely overwhelming, specifically as they relate to loss. We don't often think about loss in the Christmas story, but one of the most profound and difficult realities is that in Matthew 2, after Jesus is born, there's this little section, we're having some technical challenges here this morning with connectivity, and I'm not sure why. So maybe you'll see it on the screen in just a little bit, but I believe it's verse 16. When the wise men come and visit Jesus, they are given a vision. Herod, of course, if you're familiar with the story, Herod has told them, go, and when you find out about this child that's been prophesied, tell me, because I want to come worship him too. And we know that he's trying to manipulate and do all these things, and that's not what's actually going on. He doesn't want to give up his power to this new king of the Jews that has been prophesied about. And so when Herod, so the wise men take an intentional route far away. They do not go back through Herod's land, and he finds out that they tried to trick him. And so what he does is he then gives an edict, and he sends his people, and he says, kill all the boys that are under 2 years old. And that's what happens. And Mary and Joseph and Jesus, they get wind of this, and they flee to Egypt. But what we hear in Matthew 2 is if it's not going to pop up here, I'll just read it. I'll go old school for some of you. Some of you say it's the only school, right? Okay, so we're in verse 16. When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi. Are we good? There it is. Thanks, Dwayne. You saved us. Okay, now we can get on with it. I've tried two different devices this morning that have been unsuccessful. So we'll see. We'll see what happens here. But, okay, so when Herod was furious when he realized the wise men had outwitted him. He sent soldiers to kill all the boys around Bethlehem who were 2 years and under based on the wise men's report of the star's first appearance. Herod's brutal action fulfilled what God had spoken through the prophet Jeremiah. Jeremiah was talking about the Babylonian exile and the heartbreak that happened when Jerusalem was overcome and people were carried off to Babylon. A cry was heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning. Rachel weeps for her children, refusing to be comforted, for they are dead. In the midst of the beautiful story of the birth of God into the world, there is weeping and there is mourning that is happening at the exact same time. Hope and complete despair. We want to do some real talk this morning, and we want to talk about loss. And we also want to talk about hope, and we want to talk about the reality of the journey and celebrating through it while not being dishonest about it. Some of you have been reading through, hopefully most of you have been reading through our Advent readings, and there's more of those packets in the back. There are daily readings that have been written by you. And today's reading, if you haven't done it yet, you'll maybe do it later, is written by Gina. And Gina shares a little bit of her story about some of the loss that she's experienced. Gina and Jared have been a part of LifePath longer than anybody except Bethany and I. And so they've journeyed with us for quite some time. Yeah, I think you do get an award. Here, let me make sure you're on. There we go. And we're on number 6. And so we know each other well. We've journeyed through a number of different seasons. That was back when we had 2 children and you had 2 children. And now we have 3 and you have 5. Mm-hmm. So you're winning. Depending on how you look at it. But Gina, why don't you just share a little bit about your journey? You wrote something that people will read maybe later today about honesty and dishonesty regarding celebration and faith. But why don't you first just tell us about a little bit about your story, about the things that you did not choose that are some of the losses that you've had to walk through.
I will definitely do that, but first I just have to say, I feel like you're going to have me do a Christmas Mad Lib, like on The Tonight Show. Just
like we're on Jimmy Fallon,
yes,
right
exactly.
Now? Yeah. Feels like it a little bit. I like it.
So my story that I didn't want to have, but it is what it is. For those of you that know us, we have 5 kids. Our youngest daughter is 6, and when she was about a week-ish old, my mom went into cardiac arrest. It was a result of after being through chemo treatments for 7 years, and she was doing well and maintaining like a solid status. But 7 years of chemo treatments weaken your heart. So she unexpectedly went into cardiac arrest and went into a coma, and eventually, with about 2 weeks later, we had to make the hard decision to turn off the machines, at which point she died. So that was my first throw into that. So you'd think that's okay, and you can make it through that, and you can, but 9-ish months later, the following June, so this was in October when my mom passed away. In June, my dad was supposed to come up and visit us, and he hadn't been feeling well at all. And my dad was diabetic, and my mom always took care of him. And I think, like, undiagnosed borderline alcoholism, maybe, thrown in the mix. And after being married with someone for 40-some years, it's hard to be alone. So we got the call one day that he had also unexpectedly passed away. So that was my year of difficulty. Trying to get through that. So that's my very personal story of grief. Also, in our immediate family, obviously, as you guys know, we have 2 boys who are adopted. And they also have a story of loss that they carry with them. that is deeply in our family as well. So loss comes in lots of different forms. But for me, the perspective that I'm going to give you, it's just what I've experienced, and that it's my journey. And take what you will from it. It's different for everybody, and you might walk through it differently, but this is just, this is where I'm at with it.
Yeah, people can walk into this season experiencing losses of a dream that they thought life was going to be a certain way. It can be a loss of loved ones that they're reminded of. It can be a loss of a job, a loss of, it can be health related. There's so many different ways that we can feel a depth of pain. So we don't want to act like, as we have this conversation, that this is the only thing that people experience. But as Gina and I spend a lot of time talking about this, one of the things we realized is that the depth of heartache that happens through the losses that she's experienced on a number of levels happen in so many people's lives. And sometimes it's something that's directly related to the sort of thing that Gina's going to be talking about, but other times it can be something that you might feel is so much less significant, but yet there's still an emptiness in your heart as you head into this season. And so as you reflected on this, Gina, we talked about, is it even possible? I mean, we just saw a scripture, right, of a reference of a refusal to even be comforted, right? That there's pain so deep that sometimes nothing can help at all. And yet, Jesus does some weird things and even tells us that there's times in this upside-down kingdom of God that even those who mourn are not without hope. But I think ignoring, as we get into that in a little bit, I think ignoring that idea of the real pain can actually hinder our ability to experience maybe joy or peace.
And that's kind of what I was talking about in my write-up, was that you can't really ignore it, and that there's, for me, I love the holidays and the fun and excitement that comes with it. And when I talk about celebrating, it can be anything, whether it be something really cool going on in your life separate from the holidays or like an actual holiday celebration. But there's definitely a level of joy and gratitude and excitement, but I feel like I can't reach that point fully until I have first allowed myself to feel like I'm still sad. And if I skip straight to the joy and the excitement without acknowledging the fact that there's still a part of me that's sad, that the rest feels dishonest.
Yeah.
Like I'm just faking it for someone else and saying like, yes, I'm super thankful. It's not saying that I'm not, but you have to acknowledge both.
I think there's a lot of guilt. I think there's a lot of guilt for people who are sad around the holidays sometimes, especially when you're Christ followers, because the story is a joyful story about hope coming into the world. And so there can often be this level of guilt that someone experienced because, well, I just don't feel happy. I don't feel happy clappy. And there's a whole section, I'm not trying to be critical of the church, but there's an entire section of the church in the United States that acts like the only way to be a Christian is to be a happy clappy one. The only way to be a Christian is just to be, yes, this is great, complete victory. I don't even want to talk about the struggles. And yet Jesus says, you're going to have trouble in the world. I have overcome, but you're going to have trouble. It's going to be a struggle. Life is not easy, and I'm going to be with you through that journey. But I think the grace of God gives us permission to be honest. And that's really crucial. It sounds so simple. Maybe it's worth saying again. The grace of God gives you permission to be honest about your pain in any season of life. And I think that idea of celebrating honestly or not celebrating dishonestly, maybe if we want to use the inverse, is an important starting point. Mm-hmm. When we talk about joy, it can just feel like it's crushing to people who are experiencing grief or loss. And so if we can admit that, hey, no matter where you're at, being honest is more important than putting on a facade that says, hey, it's all great because Jesus loves me. You can know that Jesus loves you and that the incarnation is true and real and that God came to the world to rescue and still feel really sad and still feel like your heart is broken in certain ways. And there is permission for that. Now, we tend to give permission early on to those around us, right? But in American culture, we don't really know how to handle grief, do we?
Well, and I mean, we say American culture because that's what we experience, right? I mean, we don't really know. But I feel like people encourage you to grieve when you first experience a loss. They want you to do it. But they want you to do it, and then they kind of want you to, like, scooch along. Because that's easier for everyone, including the person grieving. But so there's definitely an openness to that. Like, feel your feelings, experience them. But then, you know, there's a lot of reaching out and stuff within that first year. And then once you hit that one-year mark, everyone thinks, like, well, you've been through the hard part.
What's wrong?
So,
what's
right, wrong, like, how come you're still feeling these moments? And not constantly, but these moments of sadness, why is that still bringing you down? Because they kind of want you to be over it. And you kind of want to be over it.
Yeah.
And you start to feel guilty bringing it up. Like, oh, it's this again. Sorry, guys. Like,
But it's not, even if that's the subtle message that's given, it's not even something that you're able to choose, right? I mean, we had a fascinating, I'd love for you to share some of the insights, fascinating conversation about how our bodies don't lie when we're experiencing grief and loss. Our bodies just, we can try to ignore it on a purely mental, like, psychological level, but it doesn't work because our bodies remind us of the pain.
So there for two instances for me where that occurs personally. And the one is that, it's funny, the day of my mom, you'll hear me reference my mom's death a lot more, only because I feel like it was the catalyst for my dad's as well, and that one might not have happened without the other. So please don't take it as, like, one was more important in any regard.
Don't worry.
So October is difficult, but it's not necessarily the day that my mom passed away that's difficult. It's literally that two-week stretch from when we got the call saying that she had gone into cardiac arrest until she passed away. And it doesn't matter if I'm looking at a calendar. It's just hard during those weeks. The same thing happens in June because my dad was supposed to come visit us right after we came home from, like, our annual family vacation. So for me, the drive back home from that trip is always hard. Once I'm home, it's fine, but that drive home is tricky. And again, it doesn't matter the date. It doesn't matter. Yeah, your body just knows. And so that there's this level of, like, angst and stress that comes along during those periods, whether you know it or not. So then the other instance, that isn't me specifically, but our boys, we brought them home in June a couple years ago. And while that's, like, a success story for us, right, because they were finally home after a very long waiting period, for them, because there were five and recently two, they didn't really quite grasp the lead up to it, you know, the years in advance, or the success part of it, I guess, if you want to call it that. For them, it was everything that they'd known was no longer part of their life anymore, and they were here in America with a different family and different culture. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing at all, but what I'm saying is it was a traumatic event for them in the life of a small child. So June, we've noticed, tends to be a tricky month behaviorally for them. And I can say that that's definitely related, like, that shows how deeply entrenched it is in our bodies, because they don't know what time, they don't know when they came home. And the Ethiopian calendar is different than the American calendar. So to them, like, it's not like they can say, oh, it's this time of year, this month that we came. But they struggle more. I think that's reflective of the fact that that was a really difficult time for them. So I say all that because no matter what, like, you can try and shove it away and just work through it and say, I got this. And to a point, you have to do that. But there's also this level of you have to address somewhat the angst that's there otherwise.
Yeah. And that can both be, again, a permission giving to those who are actually going through seasons of struggle, but it can also be a learning encouragement to those of us, which we'll talk about a little bit later, those of us who support and encourage people in our lives that we love who might be going through that, is just to know the body won't lie. It becomes dishonest if people try to suppress those moments and those experiences and those feelings. And so we need to be people full of grace in that area too. I find it interesting that juxtaposition about finding a way forward but being honest about your grief in Psalm 42. Yes, all right. In Psalm 42, we read, and I just want you to look at two lines real quick. We're not going to pick apart the entire psalm, but the psalmist is going through a season of loss and struggling. He actually talks about mourning in the third line, but he says, "I say to God, my rock, why have you forgotten me?" Just think about that line. "I say to God, my rock, why have you forgotten me?" Do you hear the honest juxtaposition between that? I'm calling God my rock. My rock, my source of life. And then following it up with, "But here's how I'm feeling. God, you're my rock, but why have you forgotten me?" There's a balance. There's such an honesty there. I think that sometimes we feel like we don't even have permission to be that brutally honest with God, but that's not a hopeless honesty. In fact, he deals with, the psalmist here deals with this hopelessness that's crouching at his door, and yet the refrain that comes in over and over in Psalm 42 and in Psalm 43 is this line that says, as he's talking about, "I'm mourning, I'm weeping," he's talking about the physical characteristics. And I may be splitting hairs here. Let's just be aware. I might be splitting hairs. But then he looks deeper and he says, "Why so downcast my soul? Where's your hope?" Put your hope in God. He doesn't talk about his face being downcast. He doesn't talk about the weeping. "Why are you crying? Buck up." He speaks to the deepest part of him in his soul, and he reminds himself where his deepest trust lies. And to me, that is an example of an honest balance of saying, I am weeping, I am struggling, God, but in the depths of my soul, the deepest place of my soul is being threatened to be cast down. And what I know, what I've experienced about the goodness of God, is that there is hope in the deepest place in me, even when other places are struggling and hurting. So let's talk a little bit, Gina, about hope and where it lies, because I think that that's important. One of the most significant elements when we go through seasons of loss that becomes illuminated is during a season of loss, we were known in a certain way, or we knew in a certain way. Someone, some experience, some familiarity. It could even be a house. We knew the house that we lived in, and something happened financially, or we had to lose our house, or we had to move away, or whatever. We are loved by somebody, and we are known by them. And when that gets removed, that experience of not being known in the same way is one of the most painful things. It isolates us, the feeling that we were once known. And so in the midst of that, that desire to be known, it's so central to our identity. Where have you seen hope emerge in that gap, Gina, specifically in the loss of your parents at a young age?
So it's something that still, it'll periodically pop up that you think you figured out, and you have, but you just have to remember it. For me, I heard not too long ago, it's taking me this long, that one of the things that's so amazing about our relationship with God is that with him, we are fully known and fully loved together. Like, it's one thing to be known and fully loved. It's one thing to be fully known and loved. But to be fully known and fully loved combined is, like, that's what you need deep in your heart. And you really can't get that from anyone or any relationship other than that relationship with God. And I struggled with that for a long time, and sometimes still do, because, you know, with parents, you feel like there's nobody that knows you quite like your parents do, right? So it was hopeful and helpful to know that God fully knows me and loves me in that way.
It's such a simple truth, and emotional to experience the reality of that truth. But we're told throughout the scriptures that we are loved fully, over and over again. But I love in 1 Corinthians 13, Paul is writing about the future, and he says, "Now I know in part, but one day I shall know fully." And he follows that up with a phrase, "Even as I am fully known." Says God knows me fully. So we actually have, without any question in the scriptures, the clear description that God loves us fully. For God so loved the world, all of the cosmos and everyone in it, that he sent Jesus. But God knows us so fully and chooses and delights in that love relationship. And that's something that nothing else can match. So while the sting of loss will always remain in our lives, the hope of the reality that the knownness mm-hmm. that can be lost, ultimately we are known by God and loved by God in a way that is more powerful than any yeah. human love could be.
On a lighter note too, it's a little bit of a relief to know that it's not necessarily my job to do that for other people. You know what I mean? Like, you guys can all take that too, that weight of having to be that role. That's not yours.
Yeah.
That's God's role, is to fully know and fully love the people in your lives. So don't feel like you have to step in that gap and carry that responsibility all the time. I don't know. That really helped me. That I don't have to be that person for all of my people, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, that's freeing. And there are times that we can't, when someone's hurting, we can't. And we don't give truisms or, you know, platitudes to people. But there is such beauty in knowing that when I can't, when maybe your spouse is struggling in a certain way, or a friend or a family member or someone that you care about, to know that you can't offer enough love to fix the problem can be really frustrating. But to rest in the fact that the love of God is unlimited as a resource, it changes things. And can be an encouragement at the right time and in the right way, not, like I said, as a platitude. Okay, so let's lean into actual celebration a little bit, because that's kind of the theme, and we're just talking about the reality of when loss hits. But in terms of celebrating, what were or are some of the things that help you enter celebration through the ongoing sting of loss, or to be real during seasons of celebration? What allows you to enter into that without completely dreading, or how can you find something that is beyond just the grief? What have you seen?
I think one of the things that's been most helpful is to acknowledge that grief is a season, and like all seasons, they come and they go, and they come back again, and then they go again, and that's okay. Like, so it makes it feel like it's not that hard to go into what you know might be a difficult season, because you know it's going to pass. And so that's helpful. I'm not stuck in this heartache forever, or it's different every time. So that helps the celebration to come easier, you know? The other thing is that it's okay to celebrate, to allow yourself to know that, like, I can be experiencing this deep moment of grief, but I can also be experiencing this deep moment of laughter. It's not one or the other. They can be the same. I'm going to share a story, and it's probably going to sound morbid, but just bear with me. So after my dad passed away, I have an older brother and an older sister, and my brother wasn't able to come down to Texas to help get things situated with their house, but my sister and I spent a number of weeks down there. My parents were really into their pets, which is where I get it from. It's one of Jared's favorite qualities in me. But they had two sets of ashes, one from their favorite dog and one from their favorite cat, right? And, like, what are you going to do with that? And so then we also had their urns with ashes in them, right? And so now, like, I had flown back home. My sister was driving that day, and she had strapped, you know, the car is loaded up with the last of the things, and she straps these urns in the back seat with the seatbelt over them and takes a picture and says, "The gang's all here." And we could not stop laughing over it. Because who says that, for one? And it was really funny. Like, that, you know, we didn't intend to be in this part in our life, but we were, and it was still okay to laugh and make jokes, you know? Yeah. Like, so that, it just felt really good. It lightened the mood, and it made it like, it's okay, it's fine. We can laugh about this kind of stuff. That there are no, like, guidelines or boundaries for what you have to do and when you have to do it. It's fine. It was also, so when my mom passed away, Anna was tiny, and there's something, the first few weeks of babyhood is my absolute favorite. I think it's like the most precious, wonderful thing. And while the timing of losing my mom while I was hormonal and sleep deprived was not great, I often feel like it was exactly what I needed, because I was able to find these absolute moments of joy when I could just go. The baby needed to be fed, and I could go in her room and shut the door, and I could feed the baby and see this absolute beauty in this tiny little person that was gifted to me, you know? And that's worth celebrating. It doesn't matter what's going on around you in your life. That is something worth celebrating, and it's okay to do that. Yeah. On the same time, it's also okay to say that you're not okay, right? Like, it's okay to acknowledge that you're sad and that you're sorrowful. Yeah. But, I mean, we talk about that in our church a lot, like, yeah, to embrace that kind of stuff.
And one of the things that we were talking about with the grace here that Gina and I spoke about a couple days ago was that the one of the elements about the ability to celebrate is that God gives us such grace and such permission that we can experience over here sorrow, and we're allowed to experience sorrow however it looks. And then over here, even in the exact same season of life, we are given permission to experience joy however it looks. I can't tell you how many times I've spoken with somebody who, in a conversation about massive amounts of loss and sadness, something comes up that's funny, and they start genuinely laughing, and immediately there's this pang of guilt, because I'm not really allowed to enter into full joy, because I'm in a season of mourning. I'm in a season of sorrow, because I just lost my job. God gives us permission to have joy however it looks, and be at peace and delight in those moments, even if they're fleeting. Mm-hmm. Even if the season that comes and goes is like our falls these days, right? Mm-hmm. They go from summer to winter, and we're like, wait, what just happened? It was so quick. But we are given permission to delight in them even so. And that is such a gift from God. And we are given permission to just be filled with sorrow, however that looks, and not have guilt. There is such grace from God. There's seasons for each of these things. You know, Lamentations has that. Is it Lamentations? Help me out. Yeah. No. Yes. Lamentations 3? Yeah. Okay. To everything there's a season. It's a classic four-season song. Is that Four Seasons? Who sang that? Huh?
This is a
Simon and Garfunkel did a cover of it. Sorry, huh? Ecclesiastes. Thank you. Ecclesiastes 3. The birds? Yeah, thank you. Okay, sorry. I grew
stuff.
Up. That's my parents' music is my music, because they just indoctrinated me so much. So I love that era. So there is there's such hope and permission to be able to experience those seasons. And so if you're in a season where the world looks at you and says, you must be down, you must be filled with sorrow, and says it's probably not appropriate to laugh, to party, to celebrate, if that can feel honest to you, by all means, go for it. You may embrace that just like you may embrace the sorrow. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to forget sometimes. Is that true, Gina?
Yeah, definitely. Well, and like, so when my mom had died, we were down there, and Leah was 4 and Isaac was 2.5. And my dad, you know, we were there for Halloween, so he had only been 6 days, not even a week. He'd never taken me trick-or-treating as a kid, or my brother or sister, ever. And yet he was delighted to walk Leah and Isaac and take them around trick-or-treating. And he enjoyed that so much. And it was one of those instances where, like, you're not supposed to be out and happy, right? You're supposed to be inside mourning the loss of your wife. But he was able to take those, I don't know, I'm sure it was probably like 30 minutes because they were foreign too. He was able to take that amount of time to like step out of that and experience joy and celebration.
And hopefully receive it as a gift.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, so that was kind of really cool. The other thing that I think was important to go back to how to lean into celebration, I think it's often, it contradicts what we as Christians tend to think we need to do, which is always to look at the bigger picture, right? Like, think big, think God, think Jesus. So much more than what's going on right here in your life. That's great. That's not helping me get through today, right? And so for what was most helpful for me was to, like, really narrow my focus when in times of, like, great grief. Because if I looked at too big of a picture, it felt very sad and overwhelming.
Yeah, the idea that God's overcoming the world is
right.
Is very difficult in the middle of
exactly.
sorrow. Yeah.
And because it feels like, and I get the idea. The idea is like, yes, your layer of sorrow is here in the picture, you know, scheme of pictures, and God overcoming the world is here. So this is what they want you to aim
but
for,
Jesus
right?
But Jesus cries when Lazarus dies and he's around them, right? Like,
right.
Like Jesus doesn't say, oh, cheer up. It's no big deal. Jesus hates death.
Yeah.
And it breaks his heart. And so the idea that somehow God would say, oh, you just don't get the big picture. You'd be fine if you did. It's not honest to the picture of Jesus that we get. Sorry.
Right. No, it's okay. So what I was going to say is that it's just for on a practical level, zooming in as close as you possibly can to the task in front of you or what you need to do for that hour and paying attention to that and only that and then moving on to the next hour, that was the best way to kind of walk through those, like, okay, I don't know, it's Christmas time and people get sad during Christmas sometimes. I'm going to decorate the Christmas tree. That is all I need to do. I do not need to think about who's here at Christmas or who's not here at Christmas and why I'm missing them. All I need to do is hang up this ornament and hang up, you know, and it's okay. Like, that felt manageable.
So this idea of narrowing the focus, I mean, even when the writer of Hebrews talks about how we fix our eyes on Jesus, that's even a narrowing of focus of the fact that Jesus is with us. Sometimes there's all these stresses there in this little task. We can begin to, it's not an either or, either the things I'm involved in or like a faith-related issue. Sometimes the way we narrow our focus is just to trust and dwell on the presence of Jesus with us too in those moments.
Yep.
So one of our most crucial theological understandings that really impacts how we see God and how we see life is the understanding that God at God's core is redemptive. This is a big difference, and sorry if we're going to burst some bubbles here, but there's a big difference between kind of a colloquialism like everything happens for a reason, okay, or I'm sure God's behind this, versus in the junk of life and the pain of the world, God is so redemptive and loves us so much that God can even take rotten things that happen. God's not the cause of those things, but God can take them and work for good and bring good and beauty out of it. That is the nature of redemption. Mm-hmm. So on one extreme we have, well, like God's bringing this pain to teach me a lesson. God gives someone that I love cancer so that I can become more patient. That's a damaging and dangerous theology. Or, on the other side, this is just a terrible thing and there's no, God can't be in it at all. But what we have in a redemptive God is even in the pain that happens from a broken world, God can bring redemption, God can bring hope. God can work with the things that are the worst things in the world and turn them into nutrition,
something less bad.
For growth. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't want to use the phrase fertilizer because that's a really kind of profane image. But the idea that God can take something that's lousy and terrible and heartbreaking and use that as the groundwork for something beautiful that comes, that's the story of redemption. So just how have you, we've been talking about how to celebrate kind of despite our losses, but let's do our final phase of kind of leaning in. What have you seen, where have you seen opportunities to celebrate specifically through the redemption of your losses, Gina?
There are three main things that I think of as worthy of celebrating that possibly would not have occurred without the losses. One is, when my mom passed away, my sister and I, our relationship suffered because I was hormonal and sleep deprived with a newborn experiencing grief, and she was about to get married. So that was hard. But when my dad died and we spent weeks together down in Texas, that really rekindled our relationship. So without that happening, I don't know how or if it would have rekindled. So while it's hard having my dad pass away, I felt like that all needed to happen to bring us back to where we were before, I guess. Or not before, but differently. So that's one thing where redemption occurred. The other story, which is much longer and I can share it on another day, but I'll give you the brief version. So my parents lived in Texas during this time, and we were going to go visit them over Thanksgiving. But when my mom got ill, it was clear that we were going down now in October and not in Thanksgiving. When our original plan for a Thanksgiving trip was that we would visit my parents, and on the way back we would swing by Austin, and then we would, you know, visit the Davenports, who were in Austin at the time, and then we'd come home. So shifted a month earlier, now it's October, we still felt the need to go visit friends and make this trip down to Texas not just all like doom and gloom, but like, let's please do something fun. So we did go to Austin to visit the Davenports, who were then living there. And while we were there, we went to their church with them, and I missed the entire service because newborn, so I was out nursing her somewhere. And Jared was in and had listened to this sermon, and the sermon was about the cost of adoption. And I don't mean the cost like financial at all. That's really important to understand. But it was this amazing message, and it really, really spoke to his heart. I'm going to take you back a little bit. Prior to that, years before, I had brought up, maybe we should adopt. And he was like, no, we should not adopt. And it was fine. We were both just on very different levels. And I said, okay, that's fine, God. Like, I'm going to give this to you, and I'm going to step away, and it's fine. Anyway, so then years later, he's coming to me and telling me, maybe we should adopt. If we hadn't have been in Austin and seen that sermon at that time, that might not have happened. We might not have Abram and Ezra in our family. So, like, while it's hard to link my mom's death with the opening of the doors in our heart to that, I feel like they're intricately linked. So, let's take that a step further. This one's hard. I'm going to do my best. Abram is, like, the most joyful, exuberant kid ever. If anyone spends any time with him, particularly outside, you'll know this. But every once in a while, obviously, there are moments of deep sorrow. And so we've had a few times, not many, but a few. It's usually when I'm tucking him in, when they occur, where he will just get very intense and, you know, just have a sorrowful moment and start crying and say, I really miss my mom and my dad. And I can say, I know, me too. And I feel like that is a level of connection that is really, really important, particularly in our relationship, because he and I are so, so very different in like every way possible. And so that connection is integral to our relationship and the health of it. And so my loss, as hard as it was, brought me to this point where I could connect with my son that I didn't even have or know existed at that time. And that's pretty cool. So I celebrate that.
Yeah, and it's worthy of celebrating. Yeah, there is such beauty if we continue to walk mm-hmm. down the road and look with eyes to see that God can bring from pain. Thanks, Gina. I know that's These are not easy things to share, and hopefully you all know I did not put Gina up to this. We spoke a lot, and she, because of her heart, desired to share and dive into things that are very difficult to talk about in front of people and just period. But I'm so thankful for that. So let's talk about one more thing, because mm-hmm. we got to wrap up. Another element of God's redemption. Going back, especially related to that sense of being known, but the element of redemption is that Jesus has created a community of people who are called in the scriptures by name and invited to relate to one another as brothers and sisters. We use that language around here. It's not when I talk to someone and say, "Hey, brother," it's not because I'm trying to mimic, you know, the 80s culture of my middle school life. It's because I see brothers and sisters around me, and this is what God calls us to be. And parents even, and aunts and uncles and cousins and nephews and nieces. I look around, I see all my little nephews and nieces every Sunday morning when we come here, spiritually speaking. And so that is not and should not equate to any sort of a replacement, mm-hmm. because we can't replace people that we love in our lives. But that does not discount the reality that we have also been given people who are called and invited and able to know us and let us be known and let us know others. And that is such a gift. The church is supposed to be a family. And for those of us who have lost family members, the church can be a place of love and healing and being known again, not to replace something, mm-hmm. but to stand in the gap, at least in a little sort of a way. So, boy, that's such a hopeful concept. Practically, though, how can others help? Paul talks in Romans 12 about rejoicing with those who rejoice and mourning with those who mourn. But practically speaking, what does it look like? Let's just talk about this, for us to be family, Gina, in meaningful ways. How have you seen that? What's it look like, and who has responsibilities in various areas in this journey of love?
So I think in the initial onslaught of when you first experience that deep grief, when you first have your loss, at that point I think it's the responsibility of the community to kind of force yourselves on people and do stuff for them. Beyond that, you know, when you're at the point where you're a couple years out and it's still hard for you, it's not anyone's fault that they forget to think that it's hard. So it's kind of your personal responsibility to say, this is still hard, mm-hmm. and I need help here. And I often think about it as like, when you're preparing for a hurricane, you lock the doors, you cover up the windows, you know, you board them up, you sort of batten down the hatches and make it like you fortify your fort, right? And oftentimes in a time of grief, that's what you do. You fortify your little space and you like block people out, because that's what you have to do to kind of emotionally preserve yourself. And I think as the person who is experiencing the grief, you have to take down the boards off your windows. You have to unlock the door, and you have to like open it up and let the community around you come in, and actually tell them, this is when it's hard for me, and any encouragement you can give during that time would help. And I say that because this year was the first year that October hit, and I like actually put it out there that I don't like October. And it was the easiest one I've ever had. And it could be a number of things. It could be the fact that people were praying for me, though I don't like to say, you know, prayer, whatever. We've talked about this before, that the number of prayers does not equate to, like, God's fortune or whatever you want to call it. Yeah. But it could also be that I had people sending notes or dropping off flowers or just random things, even just a little note to say, like, I thought of you today. It was hard, I know, or something like that, you know, and that really helps. So I think the responsibility is on both sides.
Right, you're inviting the idea that it's a two-way street, and that sometimes when we know we're going through seasons, and deep down, even though it's hard, to know that if I let other people know that, hey, just so you know, this coming week might be difficult for me, knowing that the community could in simple ways, you have to know yourself and how you're processing things. But if it's a season of loneliness, saying, I could use a couple conversations this week, or, you know, I don't really want to be alone every evening, or whatever the case might be. That's a really hard thing to be honest about. But the church is created to be able to fill those gaps and love each other through it. So there might be times where people would love to love you, but they don't know how. And this goes back to honesty. So you have to be able to be honest with other people. This feels loving to me. And maybe the loving thing is, hey, you guys know that this date is coming up, and that's actually really painful. Mm-hmm. So I'd appreciate you not reminding me on that day.
Yep.
That's a part of honesty too, and helping the community around you love, because lots of people are well-meaning and want to do things.
Right.
So you've got to help them understand what's helpful.
Right, what's good for you. Because sometimes it's a matter of, I know this is coming up, and it's hard, and I don't want any of you to acknowledge it at all. Leave me alone. And that's fine. If that's what you need, then that's fine. I tell my kids, like, sorry guys, if I'm short of patience or just out of sorts, just bear with me. And they get it. They're okay. So.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that you said when we spoke a couple of days ago was one caution as we kind of move through this. And the caution was of not always letting the pain have to be the main part of the story.
Right. So it's a part of your story, and it's always going to be. But, like, I don't introduce myself saying, hi, I'm Gina. My parents died when I was 30 years old.
Yeah.
Like, it's part of who I am, and those that get to know me will know that part of me. But it doesn't need to be my leading focus.
Yeah, you are more than the pain that you've experienced.
Exactly, exactly. I actually noticed this past week. Abram was writing a letter to a missionary. And, you know, you can include whatever you wanted in the letter. And he didn't know what to write. And I was kind of giving him ideas. I was like, well, you could write that you like soccer. You could write that you're 7 or your birthday's the day after Christmas. You could write that you were born in Ethiopia and now you live in America. And I gave him all these ideas. Obviously, you guys could, anybody can tell that Abram has been adopted to us, right? His story of being Ethiopian American is out there all the time. So then he writes this really cute letter, and I read it, and it says nothing about that. And I couldn't help but think that this was one instance, because these people aren't going to see him or us, where he got to make a story that had nothing to do with the hard part of his story. You know, like, that didn't have to be out there. And I just thought, like, that's totally healthy and awesome that we get the opportunity to do that. Like, our pain is there, and it's a part of us, and that's fine, but you resting in that and relying on that part of our identity is equally as damaging as ignoring it altogether.
Yeah. All right, so last question. I won't throw it up here because of our ongoing tech issues, but in Matthew 5, Jesus, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. What speaks to you in a statement like that, or what bothers you in a statement like that?
So first, because I know that Jesus can handle it, I kind of want to tell him to shut up. Because I don't want to hear it. And that's just being honest. But it's hard to explain in the sense that, I mean, you're blessed in a special way when you're mourning because you're comforted. But it's not a way that you would choose, you know? Like, I would never say that. There were times when I felt Jesus' presence during those times of intense mourning that I've never felt before. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't choose that, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's a really tricky spot. But at the same time, there's this level of, it sucks. It's a club you don't ever want to ask to be a part of. But it's almost like there's a community of fellow grievers. Right? So for people who have experienced immediate and deep loss, there's just this level of connection that you seem to be able to jump into with others. Yeah. And so not only for them being able to comfort you when they've been through it and you're walking that path, but I've had the opportunity to be able to unintentionally comfort those that have lost someone without even realizing it, just because I know what it feels like. There's no false bravado, I guess, is what it comes down to, is you can just skip over the fluffy talk and go straight to the real talk right at the beginning, and that's refreshing. And to get to the blessing part, is that I've been able, in the times that I've been able to be the person to provide the comfort or the, I don't know, wise words or whatever you want to call it, the shared experience, we'll go with that. It's not something that I went out and, like, strive to do. You know, we've talked about in our community about going to serve, to do, to act. It's a great thing to do. And sometimes it feels like work. Mm-hmm. And that's okay, because it's not always going to feel great and easy to serve. But this is a way where it's like you get to serve, for lack of a better word, and bless someone else without being intentional about it and without trying. It's just with being you and your life experience.
And if when the angel meets Mary and says, "Greetings to you who are highly favored," and the reason that she is favored is because God is going to use her in a beautiful way. She gets to bear God to the world. If that's a part of what it means to be blessed, then those who have gone through hardship in certain ways are able to bear God toward others who have experienced hardship and feel very alone in a way that other people just simply can't. And so there is such beauty, and it doesn't take away, it doesn't make light of it at all, but there is such beauty in those of you who have walked through pain in certain ways that God can, has, and will use in the future to show other people that they are not alone, that they are still loved by God, that there is still hope in the future. Gina can relate to certain people in ways that I never could. Gina can reveal God to
that's
people in ways
I'm talking today.
That I never could. And that's actually the impetus for this whole thing. We realize that if we're going to talk about a subject this serious, we need to actually talk about it in a real way, not in me giving principles for how to do this and what it looks like. We wanted to walk through it in a way that's consistent with who we are as a church. There's a beautiful song written. Actually, I don't know if it's beautiful. I couldn't find the song at all. So I only know the words. So I have no idea. It might be terrible, terrible melody. But there's a song written in 1907 by a guy named Charles Naylor. And it's called "To Know That He Knows," and I thought I'd read it to you as we wrap up. When my soul is oppressed with the sorrows of life, and the thought of tomorrow alarms, with my care-laden heart, then I flee from the strife, and I weep out my woes in his arms. And here's the chorus. Just to know that he knows, that my Lord understands, and his look of compassion to see, soothes the pain in my heart, is a balm for my wounds, bringing comfort and peace unto me. Yes, my failures he knows, and my sighs and my tears, and the depth of my bitterest woes. By the deep consolation he brings for my fears, I am sure that my dear Savior knows. Just to know that he knows, that my Lord understands, and his look of compassion to see, soothes the pain in my heart, is a balm for my wounds, bringing comfort and peace unto me. So we take seriously the reality that Jesus knows your pain as you head into this season, but that Jesus may give you wonderful gifts. He gives you the gift of being real, but he also gives you the gifts of joy that may come. So welcome both and be at peace. I want to pray for us, and then we'll transition to communion as we wrap up our gathering this morning. And I want to pray for Gina specifically as well. So will you pray for me? Father, we thank you that you've given us a community that we can journey through the reality of the complicated issues of pain and hope and celebration and sorrow and holidays and family. I thank you for the honesty and vulnerability of Gina being able to share with her brothers and sisters this morning so that we might get a deeper glimpse into your work and into ways to approach seasons like this and ways to love others who are walking through seasons like this. So if anyone in this community, Lord, feels like they are in the depths this holiday season, we pray that you give them safe places to deal with that sorrow and to express it, but we also pray for the gift of presence, the gift of your comfort in their lives, and the gift of community around them, letting them know that they are loved, that they are known, and fully in both ways. Thanks, Jesus, for your presence, that you are Emmanuel, that you are God with us. And give us your grace.